Well, welcome back to Prophecy Today Radio. This is Rick DeYoung, and I'm here with our good friend Dave Dolan in this post-Thanksgiving program, and we're here to go over the Middle East news update. But first, Dave, I wanted to talk to you, one, about how was your Thanksgiving. Secondly, you have told us in the past, but I don't think you've ever told our listeners about a nephew of yours that is doing a wonderful work in Haiti, and I think that I would love to hear about it again, and they would as well.
Well, thanks, Rick. Yeah, I wasn't with him at Thanksgiving, but he is here in the States at present getting some medical treatment that he needed. He left Port-au-Prince last month, and that was difficult because, of course, there were missionaries, American and one Canadian missionaries, kidnapped near the airport there, I think, in October. So they had to smuggle him out in a van, two drivers in the front, and they had him hidden in the back. But he got out safely, and he'll be going back there after Christmas. I will be with him on Christmas. But he and his wife have a wonderful ministry in a small village in western Haiti, very close, actually, to where the earthquake was centered that killed quite a few people there. They have a health clinic. She's a registered nurse and runs it. They also have an orphanage there that they built and operate. And they've got three natural kids. They've adopted, six now, I think. Mm. Two of them are Haitians, four from the States. So they love children. They love taking care of people. And I was out there on Thanksgiving, actually, 4 years ago. I took them some food and some supplies and got to see their work up close. A small village, but they are so respected. The people follow Jill, Ryan's wife, Ryan Dolan. They follow her around as if she were Mother Teresa. They're very, very well loved there and do a great work. And I just love them dearly and am so proud of them.
Well, I thought around Thanksgiving here, that seems to me to be such a special story. Doesn't necessarily deal with what we usually deal with here, but I'm sure our listeners would love to keep Jill and Ryan in their prayers.
Thank you. I know they can use it. They have a lot of challenges and security situations, very difficult, but they love the Lord. They serve Him. They trust Him, and they keep their eyes open, but they walk with Him, and it's just a great calling. They left a very successful, prosperous life near Seattle to go out to Haiti to minister to the needy people there, and that's the Lord in action. That's what I'd say.
Absolutely. Well, let's get back to our normal order of business here, and we'll start off in the Middle East again, and talking about the Iran nuclear program, and Israel has been doing some exercises in the desert there near the Red Sea and a lot, and it looks like the threat of an Israeli strike on the Iran nuclear program is becoming more of a possibility.
Well, it is, Rick, but it's precisely because Iran is going full steam ahead on that program. They themselves announced just a few weeks ago that they have produced 25 kilograms of uranium that's enriched up to 60% purity. Now, that's just below what is needed to produce a nuclear bomb. They could rapidly, within 1 month, the experts say, get it up to a nuclear weapons-grade material. Of course, it has to be fitted in a rocket, a warhead on a ballistic missile. Whether they could do that right away or whether they have that already prepared, we just don't know. But they're moving full stop ahead. Now, the talks begin again in Vienna on Monday between world powers and Iran about that accord that was signed in 2015 that President Trump withdrew from in 2018. And, of course, the Iranians now massively violating pretty much everything they agreed to in that accord. One of the problems with that original accord was that most of the provisions expired anyway in 2025. It was only a 10-year agreement. Well, now it's nearly 2022, so Israel would be facing the prospect of a nuclear-armed Iran either way. But right now it looks like it could happen at any time. And as you say, Israel's been stepping up its military preparations, and not only Israel, they've been out in the Red Sea with exercises with Bahrainian and United Arab Emirate troops and American troops. seven air forces, as you said, had a joint exercise near Eilat in the south of Israel. And as I mentioned, for the first time since 1948, British aircraft participated in that exercise, along with Greece and others. So they're getting ready for the possibility, but of course it would be a very, as I've said so many times, a very difficult military operation, given that Iran's nuclear program is spread out all over that large country, and they have air defenses, they have aircraft, they have submarines, they have the allies, is the main thing that we've often discussed, all around Israel, surrounding Israel, that would join in any conflict probably, so it wouldn't be a quick and easy war. Israel, of course, did destroy Iraq's nuclear reactor in 1981. I was in the north of Israel at the time, heard the planes go overhead. And then in 2007, they destroyed a Syrian nuclear reactor. I was in Tel Aviv at the time when the planes went overhead, the aircraft. And there was little repercussions from those two things, but Iran's a whole different story, and the Israelis know it. So they got to walk very carefully here. But as they've always said, they cannot allow Iran to become a nuclear armed state.
Well, I know we do cover that issue a lot on this program on a weekly basis, but it's a very important issue, and that's why we continue to do it. If we look going from the south there, we go to the north, and most likely another Iranian-backed proxy there in Syria has been, allegedly has been attacked by the Israeli Defense Force.
Yeah, the Syrians said it was the fourth Israeli airstrike during November, this time near the city of Homs in the center of Syria. We don't know exactly what the target was, but as you say, it's mostly Iranian-linked targets that they hit. The last strike a little over a week ago was near Damascus at a convoy taking weapons to Hezbollah in Lebanon. Iran just continues to, you know, act as if it owns Syria. It's got bases all over the place. The Syrians have not stopped that. The Russians have not stopped that. And therefore, the Israelis feel they have no choice but to at least keep Iran on the run in Syria, keep it occupied with these airstrikes. But there's always a possibility that Iran or its proxies will attack Israel in response. And as we talked about earlier, Syria indicated it would respond to any of these strikes. But we haven't seen anything in the last two Israeli strikes. And again, Israel hasn't confirmed that this was even their aircraft or their missiles, I should say, that hit in central Syria. But most likely it was. And it's this shadow war going on with Iran. And again, Israel didn't invite Iran to come to Syria and set up bases along its border, its northern border, but that's what's happening along with Lebanon and Gaza and the other places we've discussed.
Well, shifting gears a little bit from Iran and Israel's relationship and that with Syria as well, I'd like to talk a little bit about Israel's relationship with some of its European international counterparts. And the first, this story was interesting to me, and I'd love to have your comment on it, where the Belgian government in Europe is allowing products to be labeled as coming from Israel, and this apparently is an attempt to discourage people from buying Israeli products. And this, to me, seems anti-Semitic, but it's just a very interesting situation.
Well, Rick, and it goes even beyond that, because what the Belgians want to do right now is to label any product that comes from Judea and Samaria, from Israeli settlements in what they call the West Bank, as coming from, quote, the West Bank and not Israel. That is supposed to, you know, help shoppers to, frankly, boycott Israel, because a lot of people don't support Israel being in the territories and Israelis living there. And it's mostly produce that's sent to Europe from Judea and Samaria, from Israeli farms there. But those are mostly farmed by Arabs. It's mostly Palestinian workers that get money for working in these Israeli farms and producing this produce that goes to Europe and the people enjoy. So it's a bit silly, it's a bit ridiculous, but it's the politically correct thing to do, And the deputy foreign minister of Israel canceled meetings, actually, on Wednesday in Brussels with officials there due to this announcement from the government. They would want Israel to begin labeling all products that come from Judea and Samaria as coming from there. So we'll see what happens. But it's part of this larger movement to divest and boycott Israel that is very popular, especially in universities and campuses across the world. So that's just what Israel has to live with.
It is, and it hasn't necessarily taken root, but it continues to simmer along, and at some point it may blossom. Well, my final question is, and this is another very interesting question, and revolves around Israel internally, but I have seen some new reports that by the year 2050, 1 in 3 Israeli Jews will be the ultra-Orthodox religious Jews.
Well, actually, right now, it's about 1 in 3, about 30-35%. So, in other words, what they were saying, and that was the National Economic Council in Israel gave that projection for 2050, we should live that long. But it would mean that basically the Haredi or Orthodox community will continue to be about a third of the country, they're projecting. They're not losing followers. They have large families, and traditionally most of them do. And they'll continue to be a major body politic in the country of Israel. And I think that's mainly for the good, because they bring some spiritual values to the country. They're morally against abortion, for instance, and this sort of thing. So it's a good balance to the ultra-liberal communities that we see down in Tel Aviv and elsewhere.
Well, there certainly are some ultra-liberal communities there. And we do know, and just switching gears a little bit to looking at end times prophecy, we do know that Israel is going to play a role. Now, the ultra-Orthodox studying Scripture, and of course us as Christians, we look differently as to how they would view Scripture. But as they study Scripture, and their role in the end times is going to come into play, it's just an very interesting development.
It is, and of course, for the first time ever, Israel has a kippah-wearing prime minister, a prime minister that is an observant Jew, and openly so. Benjamin Netanyahu had some strong religious views, too, but not so much that he would wear a kippah all the time, you know, the head covering, and Naftali Bennett does. So another indication, as such as prayer, increasing prayer on the Temple Mount, that we're moving into those last days, and all the prophecies will be fulfilled as the Scriptures say.
Very much so. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you have a good week there, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you, Rick. God bless.
We're going to take a break right here on Prophecy Today, and when we return, we will be talking with Winky Medad and Steve Herzig, and we will bring up the subject of Hanukkah and its importance today. Stay right where you are, right here on Prophecy Today.